Hello, everyone. Welcome to a Single Tree podcast. This is episode number 11. We're going to talk today more about getting feedback from our environment and how we can synthesize that and assimilate it into the forming of ourselves and how to do that in a constructive way. I'm Joel.
And I'm Brandon. Hello.
Welcome. Happy New Year. It's January 2nd. And we realized we didn't really talk about the holidays at all, but we're just going to keep on trucking right along. But happy New Year. Happy 2018. We appreciate your feedback. We thank you for listening and are thrilled that you're just along with us on this journey. And we hope that the things that we're talking about are helpful. We'd love to hear what you have to say about them, your thoughts, your experience of some of these things, and just are grateful for you to be with us. We've been talking in a lot of the episodes of this podcast about the large self, and talked about how to maybe enact the large self on an individual level, and haven't maybe talked as much about the connection between that and the largest self, which would be kind of ultimate being itself. And so we wanted to just talk a little bit about that today. It's just a point of reference for us all. But basically, when we're talking about the large self, we're talking about how we can enact a more developed sense of being within ourselves and relate to ourselves, relate to our small selves, and help ourselves grow. But we're also talking about that in the same way in terms of, you know, there's larger beingness itself outside of our individual selves that helps us and helps us have kind of an idea of what it means to be a more developed self. You know, I think it's one of the ways that we can conceptualize this, or just one of the ways that we see it in our lives, is when you know, we're talking with people who have encountered difficulty in their lives, and you know, just their ability to have a sense of resilience in their difficulty, and you know, sometimes they're able to just develop this sense of resiliency in their lives when they almost seemingly have no one to help them. They're able to really even like parent themselves. We see children, you know, who have maybe lost parents or had parents who have been compromised in some way, who are able to parent themselves or able to even parent other siblings or parent their parents. And we say that they're parentified, you know, but somehow they've developed this ability to sort of be a more mature self, even as they've needed that from someone else. And so I always think that's interesting and kind of amazing that people are able to develop the ability to grow and mature, and that has to come from somewhere. That ability has to come from somewhere. So it's almost like they've tapped into this thing that's greater than themselves, as a way of becoming more than they are. And that's a way that, you know, someone from a larger self perspective could just gain the ability to be more than they are. And it seems like it's just kind of coming from somewhere, coming from outside of them.
Yeah, it almost seems like there's just an inherent part of us that does that on some level, and you know, whatever whoever we are, whatever our perspective is or vernacular, I kind of think of it as, you know, just kind of consciousness working through us. And you know, one of the things that, at least in my understanding, is that consciousness is always like one of the inherent parts of consciousness is that it's always expanding and evolving. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. you know, if you go by that rationale, which, you know, I don't know if that's true. It seems to be kind of to me that, mm-hmm. that there's something to that. But if you go by that rationale, then yeah, then it always is happening in us on a pretty fundamental level. Mm-hmm. And you know, it just kind of expresses itself through whatever kind of level of consciousness we have, you know. And mm-hmm. you know, in some ways it's kind of a gift, you know. But yeah. I mean, I think in addition to that maybe inherent phenomenon happening in us, right? Consciousness just naturally working through us to try to expand and become more complex. If that's an inherent part of us, and we become more conscious of that and work with it by adding tools to kind of accelerate that process by using feedback from the outside, then we're putting some pretty two powerful forces together, really, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a lot of, you know, then through putting those two forces together, there's a lot of potential and creativity that comes through that process, potential for change or expansion or experience of this larger self, mm-hmm. That really starts to become pretty alive.
Mm-hmm. So what are the tools that you're talking about? You're talking about kind of the feedback that we get from our environment that we were talking about the last time, or?
Yeah, that's a really powerful tool. That's a really powerful tool.
That's one of the tools.
Yeah. If we go by this rationale that the biggest consciousness, right, or the large mm-hmm. self or God or however you want to say it, it's mm-hmm. Consciousness is just naturally working through us as individuals, and it's manifesting through us, right? And mm-hmm. then the inherent part of that is that consciousness is always evolving and expanding and adding complexity, and we're aware of that, and we're starting to notice aspects of ourselves that we either want to grow or adapt, or it's helping us notice aspects of ourselves that really aren't true or helpful. So consciousness working through us helps us kind of shed layers of things that aren't working or aren't true. Mm-hmm. And then, so when you add that process to integrating feedback from the outside, mm-hmm. then it just intensifies it. 'Cause really, you know, one might say, you know, consciousness is trying to expand and add, you know, become more complex through us. Well, the same thing is happening from the outside as well. And mm-hmm. then we're just adding more, even more complexity at that point. Does that make sense?
Right. So you're continually expanding.
Sure.
And the same is happening all around you.
Yes. And if we can open to feedback from others, we're just expanding what's already happening inside of us anyways on a really fundamental level.
Yeah.
It's just becoming more robust. The same thing's happening, just in a different way from feedback from the outside.
Yeah.
But it's all really just kind of, seems to me at least, that it's just consciousness, experiencing consciousness and becoming more mm-hmm. complex and expanding. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good way to say it. We're going to talk a little bit more today about what we started to talk about last time, which is, you know, kind of getting feedback from our environment and how we can take that feedback and how it can be helpful and constructive in helping us develop ourselves. And, you know, we've also been talking in the past episodes about kind of receiving the good and the bad. You know, not judging it all the time, even though that's a necessary role that our brains have. But being able to sort of take in or receive everything, the whole of our experience, in a way that is actually helpful to us in doing this work of kind of developing ourselves and expanding our consciousness, as you're putting it today. But we're just going to talk about ways to do that are helpful. You know, a lot of people who've experienced trauma or who have experienced difficulty, you know, abuse that we've all experienced in some form or another. It's difficult to, we all find it difficult to trust other people. We find it difficult to trust reality and existence itself because those bad things have happened to us. And so we're going to kind of address how we can encounter and experience life in a way that will be helpful, where we can take feedback and kind of come to terms with some of the things that happen in our lives, the circumstances that present themselves, and, you know, help ourselves form some kind of narrative and some type of existence that just comes to terms with some of those things that happen, with everything that happens, and helps us move forward. So, you know, one of the things that comes to mind for me in this discussion is just, you know, that we have to be able to trust reality itself in some form or another. So when we're talking about kind of the largest self, or some people might say God or even the universe, we have to have some level of trust, some level of faith that reality itself has good in it. So that's a place to start, and that's not an easy thing to come to, especially when bad things have happened to you.
Well, I mean, I think that's what we're trying to do from the point of birth. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. We're trying to find just a basic trust and safety.
Yeah.
Aren't we? You know?
That's a good point.
And
safety. Yeah.
You know, depending on our formative experiences, maybe that the ability to to settle into that trust and live in it more deeply is a little bit more easier if we have some positive experiences. In our formative years, maybe it's a little bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. If we had some difficulties early on. But either way, the task is really kind of the same. So we're always trying to find and live into that mm-hmm. that trust and that safety of just mm-hmm. life or the universe or God, and that's not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
You know?
It might hurt you, but it's okay.
Well, sure, but that's the thing. If we trust life or consciousness or God or whatever you want to call it, then it recontextualizes our experiences. If
pain has a different meaning.
Exactly. Yeah. If our level of trust is there, then it's deeper than just the pain we feel or being hurt or being punished, right?
Yeah.
The context of the pain becomes bigger.
Yes.
It, and like you exactly like you said, more meaningful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our experience in the world is relative to our relationship with, you know, the level of trust that we have. Mm-hmm. I think with life, if our level of trust in life or consciousness or God or, you know, is more strained, then, you know, our experiences maybe tend to feel more black and white or rigid or less complex, and we're trying, you know, the idea is to go deeper into that trust so we can have a more complex experience.
Mm-hmm. Do you think everyone has trouble trusting?
Sure. We're just all on a spectrum, I think, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
We're all wrestling with it.
For sure.
I think, you know, and we're all wrestling with it. It seems to me, the wrestling is really kind of shaped by our programming and our experiences.
Yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? So the style, we're all wrestling, and we're all wrestling in a different style based off of our own experiences and programming.
Yeah.
But
there's a discussion about trauma here. Sometimes the trauma people talk about it in terms of big T trauma, little T trauma. You know, there's a range of ways that you can be traumatized. You know, you know, some of the worst traumas that people can experience would be, you know, war and violence and famine, things like that. And then, you know, there's this range of traumas that are also maybe big T traumas that are actual, like, physical sexual abuse, even verbal and emotional abuse. And then, you know, there's what are called little T traumas, which are just kind of these unresolved hurts, which we definitely all experience. And so there's this range, but it all is, and you could throw loss in there too. You know, the loss of someone important to you, or someone in your family, someone who's close to you, or someone who's a primary support for you. Pretty much all of that stuff functions in a similar way.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't have the same effects. But it has different effects depending on the severity and just exactly the specific experience. But, you know, at the one end, the most severe traumas, you know, maybe don't come necessarily at the hands of someone that we love who's done something to us. It may just be something that happens, but it helps us. Well, it doesn't help us. It actually hinders us from believing that existence or life itself is good when bad things happen. So, but all of those things help create this this feeling of mistrust or distrust for others, and then also for just the world or life itself. So how would you tell someone to go about sort of being able to take in, receive the whole of their experience and start synthesizing it or coming to terms with it in a way that is helpful to them?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah. You're saying, you know, have the right context, you know, keep in mind the larger context.
Yeah, I think
to find meaning.
I think the starting point I would want to kind of illuminate in a conversation with someone is just maybe take a journey into looking back on their life and seeing how the theme of not trusting life has or consciousness or God has shaped their experiences. to give them a good reference point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I think if we have a good reference point, then we can find motivation to maybe start trying to do some things a little bit differently. But, you know, if we don't have a tangible conceptual understanding of how, you know, not trusting on this level has manifested in their life, there's, you know, not a whole lot of motivation to do anything differently. But so that's probably the first thing I do is, you know, just talk to them about how that's been expressed in their lives. And then, mm-hmm. you know, maybe exploring different ways that they already do that, that they already do trust.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And exploring ways that they can expand it.
Yeah.
Maybe that sounds overly simplistic, but that would be a good, you know, good starting point.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, part of, I guess, kind of assimilating our hurt into a constructive narrative is just knowing the things that have happened to us and maybe where we've lost trust, and then maybe finding ways we continue to trust or we have trusted, and trying to do that more. I'm always amazed at people's stories. You know, we talk to a lot of people who have been hurt in the past, who have had difficult things happen to them. When I first met my wife, and we've been married about 15 years now, and we were kind of getting to know each other right at the very beginning, and she said something to me that really struck me and sticks out to me as like something that, you know, even like had a huge impact on me and changed my outlook on things. You know, she had some difficult things happen to her in the past and, you know, had struggled like all of us and, you know, but one of the things that she said in kind of talking about her own narrative and some of the things that have happened to her was she wouldn't have wished that any of those things would have happened differently, which kind of struck me at the time because I didn't really feel the same way myself. I would have wished that my life would have gone differently, that some of the things that were bad, that I considered bad at the time, wouldn't have happened to me. But, you know, she had this perspective that she wouldn't have changed it because they helped form who she was at mm-hmm. the time and is now. And that was really important to me. And a lot of people that have experienced difficulty and even trauma in the past or, you know, big losses, a lot of times will have that same perspective that they wouldn't have wished necessarily differently. You know, some people do, but, in a way it's this helpful perspective to have. You know, people don't necessarily want to get rid of pain in their lives or, you know, eliminate it totally, because it becomes such an important part of who they are, and they need to be able to come to terms with it in a way, because it, you know, it is part of forming who they are, you know, and, it's a different perspective to have.
And it seems to me, you know, when someone can authentically and genuinely say, I wouldn't have changed these things, it's almost like that's a marker, you know, that marks a place that they've gotten to, maybe even, well, not maybe, definitely psychologically and spiritually, that helps them get to this point of having a different quality of life or experience, what's the difference? You know, what do you think the difference was at that point between your wife and you at that point? What, I mean, maybe there was some things that, you know, she had gotten to a point to where she had had maybe some sort of resolution or something that you hadn't had. But what, I mean, it relevant relative to trust in life and consciousness or God, how would you, what would you say the differences were between you two?
Maybe the difference, you know, was just that she was ready on whatever those specific things were for her at the time, where she was ready to kind of change the narrative about it, you know, that, that she wasn't going to continue to see it as a problem, you know, but she was going to try to assimilate it into her life as, and take something from it, you know, whereas maybe I was at a place where the difficulty in my own life was, I just wasn't ready. I just wanted it to go away. I wasn't ready to, you know, kind of assimilate that part of my story and create something beautiful or positive from it. It's just a, and that doesn't mean that, you know, it's wrong for you not to be at that place. It's just kind of, but it is a process of coming to that place, you know, and understanding in terms of the largest self or God or universe, you know, what the universe or life hands us. It's understanding, like you were saying, that the greatest context is that, that we are okay, that life isn't handing us these things because it wants to destroy us, but because it wants to, it's part of the formation process. It's part of the formation of ourselves. It's part of, just this continual expansion of consciousness. Hmm. That's the larger self perspective.
Do you think, I'm still kind of wondering about how we can make connections between this example that you provided with you and your wife. How would you say, how do you think she did at being open to outside feedback as opposed to you? Do you think that made a difference in her, where she ended up, or, you know, that the point of resolution that she was?
Yeah, I think, you know, when bad things happen to us, it's easy to see those things as bad, you know, and we want to get as far away from them as possible, or we want to eliminate them, right? And that's when we are not really receiving the whole of our experience, because we want to get away from certain things, or we want to categorize them as bad and dismiss them. You know, we can do that in a lot of different ways. We can ignore them. We can say, why has this happened to me? It's not fair. And, you know, just try to sort of like, forget about it, or, you know, just shuffle it off in some way. And I think that's what I was tending to do at that point, is just say, these bad things in my life shouldn't have happened to me, and I don't understand why they did, and I want to get as far from them as possible. Or, you know, there's another perspective that you can take, that you want to be like a victim and live in kind of victimhood to those things, which is also not helpful. And so I think she just had this perspective that the things that happened to her, although they were painful, although they were difficult, she was still willing to accept them as part of her story and as something that would help her to grow.
So she was, there was less maybe resistance.
Yeah.
And
to the bad stuff.
a willingness to accept and to learn and to integrate them.
Yeah, integrate it. That's a good word, I think.
Yeah, and if we go back to kind of my original suggestion that, you know, there's consciousness trying to become more robust and complex in us, which kind of requires us to do something with this programming and our experiences that we've had, especially in our formative years, then consciousness kind of maybe even inherently is requiring us to shift and move, you know, or adjust that programming and those experiences. They almost have to for consciousness to become more robust. And then, you know, if we're doing that internally and we're adding also the layer of being open to outside experiences and how they're shaping us, once again, consciousness trying to be more complex from the outside coming in, then it all kind of comes together, which is, that's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, when you talk about programming, you're talking about like the things that we've kind of attached ourselves to that we think make up ourselves, you know, could be our values, could be, you know, our narratives.
Yeah.
What happens to those when you take this sort of approach? What is done with those? I mean, are they change? Shift.
I think if we go by the suggestion that there's just consciousness moving through us, trying to become more robust and complex, then, and if we have these programs, they almost kind of at least maybe seem to me as maybe blocks to that consciousness becoming more robust. And so, yeah, you know, I think, you know, we talked a couple of podcasts ago about how we were talking specifically about a certain kind of programming that I had was this self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. Well, if we go by the rationale that consciousness for me has been working through me, trying to become more robust and complex, then what it has done is not radically, it's not eliminated that program, right? Mm-hmm. But it has shifted that programming and made it more evolved.
Yeah.
So yes, I think that's what happens. No, I also think that maybe there's programming and beliefs that can just fall away. Mm-hmm. I could, you know, there are certain programs or beliefs that I've had that have just been over time disregarded, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Mm-hmm. Shed.
Yeah. But I think it's this process of just consciousness trying to mm-hmm. work in me, become more robust. You know, it's almost like it's taking up more room and there's less and less. The more conscious and aware I am of that process happening inside me, that just consciousness is, you know, trying to work in me and become bigger, then there's less and less room for, you know, certain programs or ideas or beliefs that that just maybe aren't as real or helpful.
Yeah, maybe they are too rigid.
Sure.
Some programs are too rigid. They don't actually allow you to expand. They don't allow more complexity. They limit your growth then.
Right. And it's, you know, like I said, it's not to say that, you know, I don't want anyone having the idea that there just needs to be this huge purging and elimination of programs and beliefs. I don't think it happens that way.
Right.
I think some stay and are softened or evolve, like you just said. You know what I mean? They start out rigid and, you know, like my program of self-sufficiency from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you know, my family of origin was very rigid, but it's softened. It's become more malleable and flexible. Mm-hmm. It's almost like consciousness has
happened.
Has happened to it. It's almost like it softened it. You know what I mm-hmm. mean? And other programs or ideas that I've had have just gone away. Not without pain, but they've gone away.
What is the what is the function of the softening? What does that allow? What is the point of that? Is it so that you can become more connected or more receptive?
Absolutely. I think that more connected, more receptive, more flexible. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. You could do that with almost any sort of programming or anything.
Anything
that's kind of a belief that you have or a way of approaching life. Like I was saying about victimhood, you know, if you approach your life as a victim, that's a very rigid stance. You know, you're always a victim of what happens to you, whether that's your trauma in the past or you can approach life as a victim, you know, so you're really sensitive to bad things happening to you and almost get something out of being pitied or something like that, or people feeling sorry for you. And it's this kind of rigid program that you have for approaching life, which doesn't allow for certain things. It doesn't allow for your growth, for one, as a person, if you're just stuck in this victim mentality.
Yeah.
And, similar program.
And what you're talking about is that it opens us, it makes us more flexible, and it allows us to be more receptive to outside feedback.
Yeah.
You know, which we've been talking about.
Yeah. So let's talk about that in terms of how do we trust other people, you know, because we're talking a little bit about, you know, trusting existence and life itself. But, you know, what this looks like practically in our lives is how do we actually trust the people around us, the our family members, friends, people who are trying to help us, and the general public. You know, a lot of times our hurts kind of come at the hands of other people. And so what would you say about just being able to be trusting but not opening yourself up for more hurt unnecessarily?
I think a big way we can start helping ourselves is just on an individual level, start trying to make trust in life or consciousness and God a little bit more tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Finding tangible ways to do that for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because that kind of helps us get used to feeling a little bit scared but still being open to potential for something to happen that's good. It actually opens us to this experience of faith, right?
Yeah.
If we can start finding small tangible ways to do that for ourselves, to engage in life that way, and we have enough experience enough experience of feeling what that faith feels like, then there's some resilience, there's more willingness to engage in this faith process, then we can start kind of doing that more with people. But maybe I suggested to do it that way because, you know, people are just life anyways, you know what I mean? And so if you're doing it with life, then you're able to kind of do it with people too.
Sure. So you're not going to be able to do this without fear.
No.
It's important to note.
Right.
I mean, it's important to have some sense of safety.
Sure.
For people to be safe. But even with the safest person you can think of, it's still going to feel difficult to trust.
Exactly. We have this illusion that, you know, for us to do something or for us to be okay, or if it's the right thing for us to do, it should feel safe.
It should feel awesome.
Yeah. Or like, well, I didn't do that because it didn't feel right. And I'm like, well, okay. I mean, there's something to be said for that. But a lot of times when you draw that context out, well, it didn't feel right because it was scary. Well, okay. You know, yes, we have to be willing to feel fear.
Yeah. Standing up to fear is trust in a way.
And faith.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, when we seek out feedback from other people around us, you know, we talked last time, but, you know, it's important to kind of pick the right people who are looking out for your best interests when you're looking for direct feedback. And, you know, especially in the case of people who have been abused or even currently in abusive relationships, it's important to realize that sometimes, you know, seeking out help or feedback from those people in a vulnerable way may not be the best or healthiest thing that you could do. But we're also saying that you could take that experience of abuse and turn it into something beautiful and part of a resilient narrative. So in effect, you could take feedback from that relationship, from that situation, and, you know, form it into something constructive. While it may not be helpful or healthy for you to seek out what that person thinks about you or to ask them or to make yourself vulnerable in that specific relationship.
So then maybe what you're saying is that, you know, a really important part of this is to grow this trust in yourself to be able to mm-hmm. trust, mm-hmm. to be able to synthesize the feedback in a good way, whether it be from a harmful or negative experience or from someone that you love. Trust in our ability to synthesize that feedback mm-hmm. is paramount.
Yeah. And I think you have to develop some safe space in your life to be able to do that, to trust yourself. Whether that's, you know, separating yourself from people who are hurtful and just, you know, being alone, or, you know, getting into a relationship with someone who is safe for you, where you just have some safe space with them, or you know, developing some of these practices where you're connecting with the largest self, or God, to be able to develop some safe space there, because that's where you will develop this kind of resiliency and this ability within yourself to be able to trust and grow. Without any safety at all, you know, it's hard to do that.
So yeah, then there's this process that maybe we can kind of identify or delineate where you know, we need to be able to kind of find these safe spaces, these safe people that we can trust first and foremost. And then when we have those to kind of depend on and learn from, then we start being able to kind of grow our wings in a sense and start to trust our ability to receive and assimilate and integrate outside information, in a larger and more complex context than just people that we love and trust. It can be really just in life in general, but and we can grow to that level of complexity, but it's important to be able to kind of build a really good foundation first with people that we love and trust, and then we can grow outside of that. Never leave it, but it just becomes wider, more expansive. Yeah.
So we are talking about developing a strength of self to a point where you can have this ability, you know, which is it's a pretty mature ability to be able to take the bad in our lives and, you know, assimilate it into a resilient narrative. It takes some time to, you know, first, if you have really encountered a lot of difficulty, you have to be in a safe place to heal and be nurtured. And then as your, you know, strength of self develops and you do that, you're able to, you know, take on more and more, especially the negative things that happen and respond to them in a resilient way.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, so it's just a little bit more about, you know, taking feedback from our environment, from others, and being able to help ourselves to help ourselves grow and develop. And just talking about some practical ways that we can do that in our lives. First, it's kind of getting a handle on the larger context that we're in, that the bad things that happen in our lives are not from the largest self perspective seeking to destroy us, but that actually we can trust them in a way, because they are part of what is there to grow us and help us shed things that are unnecessary and unhelpful, and to help our consciousness continue to expand. So we have to have some trust in life, that there is good in life or the universe. And then, you know, there's some more practical ways that we can start identifying some of the bad things or hurtful things that have happened in our own narrative, and then, you know, work at developing a more constructive, resilient narrative. You know, not ignoring those things or pretending they didn't happen, but actually assimilating them into the narrative. Anything else that?
No, I think we ended up in a place where we can draw more off of this and talk about it next time for sure. Yeah. It's a lot in that.
Yeah, we can talk about just in the future more of the process of how do we get from, you know, kind of being broken down and injured and hurt and traumatized to a place where we can start having this sort of approach to life where we take in everything that's happened to us and just create a resilient narrative from it.
Nice.
We'll talk to you all next time. Thanks for joining us.